This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara, and this is the Kenai Conversation. On today's episode of the Kenai Conversation, we're joined by Samantha Springer, Executive Director of the Kenai Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center, which was recently named Alaska's Local Chamber of the Year. Sam, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So first, I will start this like I start all of them, which is with a bit of introductions. You know, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to be in the position of executive director, and what your role entails at the chamber.
Sure. So back in 23, I was looking for another opportunity outside of sales and managing. And a friend of mine who was a previous director, Brittany Brown, had suggested that I apply for the executive director position. And what was funny is I had seen the position, but I was not sure. I couldn't tell what it paid.
Sure.
And so I was kind of hesitant. And I just wasn't, I know I fit all the criteria, but I really like transparency in pay. So I don't know if you've noticed, but anytime we post jobs now, it does actually list the pay on it, because mm-hmm. I think that's really important.
I'm sure applicants love it too.
I think it just takes the guesswork out of it, because then you're not wasting anyone's time. Mm-hmm. But that's a me thing. So yeah. I did end up applying, got a call back really fast for interview, and I changed my entire career path and started there. Because, you know, before that, we lived in Washington for a little bit of time, but my whole life I've lived in Anchorage.
Okay.
And then I married a fishing guide, mm-hmm. moved to Washington, and then we moved back to the peninsula, which I absolutely love completely. Mm-hmm. I did not want to go back to Anchorage ever. And so
had you ever lived in Kenai before you took the job? Or I guess before you moved here with your husband's job?
No.
Okay.
No, I visited, obviously, because since I was a kid, I've lived in Anchorage. But
yeah,
living down here is so different, and I feel like it's so much more inviting and welcoming, and the pace is perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, it is – I love this place. So I definitely it became home really fast, and I think the job that I have also provides a lot of – people quickly so that you kind of get that community almost immediately.
Yeah. So what exactly does your job entail as executive director? What were you signing on for when you said yes to the position?
You know, what's funny is I don't think that the job description is ever accurate for any nonprofit. I think that your job is more other duties as assigned than it is actually like whatever the job description says. Mm-hmm. So I am a lot of things. I am a decorator.
Okay.
A lot of my job is finding funding. I go after a lot of the main sponsors, look into grants, and create the budget as far as what I think we can do. And I think something that I've done that was a little different than past directors is I built our budget around our staff rather than giving the staff what was left over after the fact, which has paid off, I think, quite a bit.
Okay.
As far as keeping people and having the longevity of the chamber work out. But yeah, literally event planner, marketing, ad creation, digital, social media. I mean, everyone there does so many things, but my job is crazy. Like, I don't even know how to describe it. Executive director is kind of a funny title because it's like, you do everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Today I was decorating a haunted chamber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I definitely want to talk about the haunted chamber back in, for another great year.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if, we were just kind of chatting a little bit about this, but as far as your role as an executive director, I'm wondering if you could maybe talk about the different directions that you've taken that position since you took over, because we, of course, have had executive directors before, but I feel like the chamber, especially under your leadership, which just giving you a bit of kudos there, is just, it's felt so energetic and has more of a visible presence. And I'm wondering if you could talk about you know, making that position your own, what that looked like.
Sure. Yeah. And I think I've always done that. I've had my hands tied a lot more with corporate jobs. Obviously, you can't change everything, but in a nonprofit, you sure can. So when I came in, the first thing I did was kind of go through operations, go through the budget, go through the event planning, and literally go through every single thing that we did and determine if it made sense, if it was profitable, if there was a return on investment, and if it made sense, which there was a lot of things that we were wasting money on. There was a lot of things that procedurally were so backwards and took so much time. And it's like when you're talking about like cleaning a kid's room and your kid wants to do it with you and you each touch the same item like 20 times before it gets put away. Like, did you actually get anything done at the end of it? Or does the room look exactly the same because you fought over where a Barbie dress went for this? That really happens to me. So
yeah, I was going to say, this is very real specific. Life,
yeah. my daughter cannot be managed well. So, but it was a lot of cutting costs and evaluating things and being like, why do we do this like this? And I actually made people stop saying, we always have done it this way. Mm. Because there was a point, I think after like 3 months, where I was like, if one more person says that to me, I'm going to lose my mind. Mm-hmm. Because who cares? Who cares if you've always done it that way? I will keep some of the traditions. Like Christmas comes to Kenai, I will stay the day after Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. 4th of July, we'll stay on the 4th of July.
Sure. Yeah.
But I refuse to be like, oh, you know what we should do? We should buy 8 million bags for the 4th of July with a logo on it for that 1 year. And then they'll just sit in the basement after that. So it was just about looking at things and deciding what was worth it, what wasn't, and really looking at what we were spending money on, especially like even advertising dollars. Mm. I was like, can anyone prove to me that putting an ad in a free map that we have at the visitor center is doing anything for us? They're coming in to see us to get that map. Why would – what are we doing?
Yeah. No, so, I was going to ask if there – those are two, I feel like, good examples. But were there any, like, glaring expenditures that you were like, oh, no, this is – we're phasing this out?
So many. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, like, thousands of dollars worth. That, and that's, you know, that really affected what we could pay staff. Even simple things like the copier contract or, like, things that just – you know, things that they just always – renewed and never negotiated, or gosh, I can't even think some of the expenses that were completely unnecessary. Because also having an event background from going way back, like to college days when I was in a sorority, like you got donations for things when you were having events because it's a fundraiser. You didn't pay for the things to then auction off.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of times where they were buying additional things to like make things better to auction, or, you know, buying a snow machine at full cost and then raffling it off. I'm like, why are we doing this? Like, this doesn't make any sense. There's so many, not just local businesses, because they're like, oh, we overextend the local businesses. Cool. Don't just ask the local businesses. Ask Anchorage, ask Fairbanks, ask Homer. Like, you don't have to just hit everybody here.
Yeah.
There's so many. Ask people in the lower 48. A lot of these businesses aren't even here. So it was just more about like, stop spending money to make money on these giant events that we were trying to do for the public. And then when we do a public event, actually have it be from us because of the funds that we raised. So like, we don't get sponsorships for Lemonade Day. We don't get sponsorships for our job shadow day. We don't get them for movie nights. Like, the things that we're providing for the community that are free, they're just free. We're doing something besides just talking about doing something.
Well, and you mentioned a couple, and you and I were talking about some of these like hallmark events that the chamber does every year. Maybe I won't ask you to go through, you know, January through December and name every event, but I mean, how is your year organized in terms of some of these larger events that people here locally have come to, I guess, just expect will be there?
Well, it's funny because, you know, I'm already into 2026 right now, and I don't think people think about that, that we're usually about a year out planning every event. So like even at our last fundraiser, what was it, 2 weeks ago, I announced the theme for next year and the date so that people were already excited for next year. And I locked in the date, I locked in the theme. I'm like, it's mine. If anyone else says it, they're copying. So it's, you know, the 4th of July is a massive undertaking between permitting and the police department and the fire department and, you know, the Department of Roads and Department of Roads. You know what I'm talking about.
I got you. Yeah.
But there's so many things that have to be done ahead of time. You know, permits for the beer garden, getting all the vendors, spray painting the grass. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So, these events look like they're just kind of thrown together, but they're massive undertakings.
Well, and I feel like too, you mentioned like movie night, which as far as I know, is something that you started, right? Yeah. Like what are some of the programs that like you have started since taking over?
Sure. So movie night was a big one for me. I love the movies in general. And I feel like something we constantly hear is that there's not enough free activities for people with kids. And so we were trying to provide something else that they could come do. But also we were trying to do it so we weren't competing with the movie theater. So at first we didn't do it on the weekends. And then we were trying to make it so the staff didn't have to work on the weekends as well. But Tuesday at 6 p.m. did not go very well. And at most we were having like 15 people there. And again, I was like, nope, I'm not going to stop. I'm going to keep trying. So this year we did them on Friday nights, I believe at 6:30 or 7, I can't remember. And it's still about the same turnout, but we're just starting to see, and I feel like it just takes time for things to catch on. I feel like if we stopped it, people would be like, oh my gosh, I just learned about it though.
Yeah.
And it's not that expensive. We bought a popcorn maker. We got a new projector. We have sound, like new speakers. We have everything to do it. And so we're just going to keep chipping away and trying to make that one work. If nothing else, it's fun for us. We started the Kenai Chronicles with the Cultural Center as a monthly program to go with the Cultural Center rotation. That's also been very well received, and we've worked with the Historical Society quite a bit to help with that. Let's see. The Business Lecture Series was another one. We haven't done one. We had to cancel a lot. So I'm not sure what happened. It was very popular the first year.
Okay.
This year, the turnout was very low, at least registration-wise. And then people would show up after I canceled it. So that was a little frustrating. So I'm trying to revamp that and figure out what makes sense. And again, we're trying not to overextend ourselves because I know people love evening events, but we work so much already that when we provide another evening event, you have to understand with a family, everyone there has a family and we already devote a lot of time there. So adding another monthly evening event actually sounds really bad right now. We brought back I don't know if First Fridays had ever been there. I know they would have art openings occasionally, but we talked to the Kenai Art Center. And originally we were going to do Thursdays to not compete, but they were like, no, let's do it like Homer and Anchorage and do it all on the same day. So we did that, and we do those, you know, 9 months of the year until we turn it into what it is right now.
Yeah.
So those are all things that I started. And then the Haunted Chamber was actually Liam's idea, but he was funny. He goes, we should do this next year. And I was like, no, we're going to do it this first year. In like 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So. I mean, have you noticed? I would think that the chamber probably keeps like stats on program participation and visitors. Have you noticed changes in how many people take advantage of programs or like stop by the center on an annual basis?
Yeah, I do a report every year. I haven't looked at this year's numbers yet. I don't. It's funny. I usually don't even think about it until almost December when I have to do my annual report for the city. But I mean, you feel it when there's a lot of people in there. And, you know, the Haunted Chamber is one of those ones where it's funny because on Fridays and Saturdays, they have to sign a waiver. Mm-hmm. So I know last year we had 1,000 waivers printed. And we had to print like 500 more.
Okay.
So it's kind of bonkers.
Yeah. I guess, is it fair to say then, or like in your experience, does it seem like engagement with the chamber has gone up since you started?
I do believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm wondering, like when you're talking about all of these, like different programs that you've started and balancing maybe what the community wants with what the staff can, you know, offer, how are you deciding what will make a good program or, you know, like when you're in that brainstorming process, what boxes do you need to check to start something that you think will be successful?
I think my problem is again, it's, these are all ideas. And then for me, it has to make time sense. It has to make fiscal sense. It has to be something that, you know, one of us at the, because I never will force my staff to work something. So if it's something that I desperately want to do and I can't find anyone to work it, then I work it. Mm-hmm. But I like to check in with everybody. And just like we have an events person, but I've told her, it's not just on you, but it is nice. Like it's her job to find who's going to fill in if she doesn't want to be there. But it doesn't mean that you have to work every single event the entire time. It's more that you're the person kind of facilitating the event to make sure that there is someone there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that's, you know, that work like life balance is so important. And I think I'm in this weird space where I'm like in between a millennial and a Gen Z where it is, I really think that it's so important to take that time off. And then I never give myself any time off.
Yeah.
But I don't want my staff to get burnt out. Mm-hmm. That's the last thing I would ever want.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you were talking about like longevity and the folks that you have there now. Can you tell me a little bit? I know you and I just talked about this, but how many folks do you have over there? What are the different roles they're performing?
Yeah. So the newest role there is the cultural center coordinator. Danielle started in that role. I had to negotiate that into the contract with the city since the cultural center does belong to the city in the visitor center. So she started out, I think, originally at like 24 hours, and now we have her there full time because there is so much stuff to do. Like at first, I don't know if we really realized how much work there was to be done in there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and what is the cultural center for folks who don't know, who haven't been there?
It's over 4,000 artifacts on display, and it will eventually be an online directory as well as a virtual tour at some point. But it's almost a museum. It's just not right now because it's an accreditation thing, which we're also going for. We did start a 501c3 as well. We're waiting to finish off the paperwork for the tax exempt status from the IRS, but we called it the Kenai Peninsula Cultural Foundation.
Okay.
As something to help assist with like Moose Meat John Cabin's roof is going to cave in eventually. It's really dilapidated. And it's almost impossible as a 501c6 to get the same kind of funding.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get it a museum accreditation. We're trying to fix the historic buildings that we can. We're trying to work with the city as far as getting a correct pathway and such for the historical tour, you know, an old town that is no longer a walking tour.
Okay.
That's something I changed when I got there.
Mm-hmm.
So does
the chamber have, I guess, like purview or ownership over those historical properties, or?
We do not, but we were the ones who distributed the walking tour. And when I realized that it was not a walking tour after walking it and realized how many people had never walked it that were in charge of calling it a walking tour, I lost it. And
I mean, what makes a walking, like, I guess, do you not just walk between one? I've been around there, but what makes a walking tour?
Well, accessibility is pretty important. Sure. Making sure that buildings are actually still historic and have not turned into Airbnbs.
Making sure
the signage is correct. There's no crosswalks, sidewalks end. It's, I always joke that no one came back to complain because they couldn't find their way back.
So. Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so did you say then that that's something that you've kind of taken up, or what's the status?
There's been a lot of meetings. Mm-hmm. The problem is because it's not ours. It's a partnership. It is a lot of meetings. Mm-hmm. So I am very hopeful that we will get somewhere eventually, but funding is always an issue. You know, you're talking about crosswalks and sidewalks and Kenaitse property and city property and private property, and it just becomes a kind of a giant mess.
Mm-hmm. Is that the goal, though, to get it to?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Eventually, someday.
Yeah.
Bucket list item.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's the cultural center coordinator position. So she has a lot of hats, and then. I have a finance coordinator who also does a lot of things like with education. I have, and that's Natalie. She's been with us for a little over a year now. I hired Maddie she used to be the Soldotna Chamber Executive Director. She's now our marketing and membership coordinator. And then I have a visitor service rep. And then I still have Liam as he comes in and out. He does a lot of like the visitor guide. He still does. He's the one who puts together the actual frame of the maze for the haunted chamber. And then he comes back at Christmas comes to Kenai time.
Yeah. The Grinch, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I have to do his prosthetic makeup, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, and you know, just talking about we've talked about finances a little bit, but you know, how much with like your staff members and operations, how much does it cost to run the chamber each year?
It's just about $400,000 a year. It might be a little higher than that, but that's about where we're at.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And as a nonprofit, I mean, you said you do a lot of fundraising. Where is that money coming from?
A lot of it is sponsorships. Reaching out to, because I would say membership is only about, I want to say 12%, 10% of our budget.
Okay.
We get money from the city, obviously, through the RFP to run the visitor center and the cultural center. And again, that's a very small portion of that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the rest is literally the events that we do put on. And then our sponsors and donors.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of grant funding. And we are starting to get into, I believe that we are going to be working with a partnership with a pull tab organization as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so what is the relationship between, you've talked a little bit about the city.
Mm-hmm.
I, of course, see you at city council meetings. I know you're there pretty regularly.
Yeah.
How much money does the chamber get from the city? And what is the relationship between the two?
Our relationship's great.
Yeah.
I really value my relationship with Terry Eubank as city manager. I think he is so easy to work with and talk to and is readily available. Even when I'm like having a hissy fit about something random, like he'll answer his cell phone. I feel like that's been such a great relationship. They come to our board meetings and give us an update of what's going on. We like them to know what's going on when I'm doing crazy things like putting reindeer in the cultural center for Christmas Comes to Kenai.
Sure.
They let me, you know.
Live reindeer.
Yeah, live. Yeah, live reindeer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an amazing one. The RFP, we get, I believe it's $157,000 a year from the city. And so it's paid monthly. Which is actually, it's pretty close to what the original amount was back in the, from the original contract.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of crazy. It went down for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I renegotiated up to where we're at right now.
Do you have any plans to try and, you know, get that maybe adjusted for inflation maybe, or?
I do. So when we have it for 3 years, and I didn't account for inflation during this first one, usually it goes up 3% every year.
Okay.
I kept it at the 157 for 3 years. When we go for our extension for the 2-year extension. I plan on adding more of the cultural center because right now we're paying for the additional time out of chamber budget. I would like that to come from the city if I cannot get grant funding for it.
Okay.
But overall, I mean, their support too, I can't say how invaluable that is when they give us the resources from Parks and Rec, maintenance, all the different things that would really add up if we were having to pay for that too. So I try not to go too crazy on that side because I know that what we can do without asking the city for money. So I try and stay within a reasonable amount that would make sense for inflation, but not be questionable. Like, why would the city pay that much?
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess like for you're talking about partnerships with the city and I'm thinking, of course, they just had the Fall Pumpkin Festival and things like that. I guess, is the chamber like collaborating with the city for those types of community events, or is it
you just
kind of
stay
in your lanes?
Mm-hmm. So when they need help, absolutely. That one is, you know, Parks and Rec does such a good job with that event on their own. We promote it. We'll put, you know, it in the newsletter. If they need assistance or they need contact information for organizations to help, that's where we kind of fill in those gaps. But they actually do a really good job of doing those events on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So we have not really – that's a City of Kenai event. Mm-hmm. The only two that we really partner on heavily where it's, you know, very – you know, like the Kenai River Marathon, it's our event, but there is no possible way we could do that without the City of Kenai.
Mm-hmm.
Just the staff time. Mm-hmm. Like they don't give any money toward that. But Parks and Rec is setting up the course and they are running the event outside. You know, Tyler from Parks and Rec is literally the, you know, announcer outside. And then the Silver Salmon Derby is a partnership. I do the majority of that. I think that one's kind of one of those ones where that one might actually change hands eventually and we just kind of take it over because there's no seasonal staff at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those weird ones.
Yeah. Where it is, I'm sure everybody's seen you on Facebook spinning the wheel, getting the magic weight.
Yeah, that is a beast of an event.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember when that event started actually and just the concept is so cool though of like just the
anyone can win. And it is a conservative resource that we should be protecting. And so it is, you know, making sure that you're not just going for targeting large fish is, I think, a really good thing.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like that one has quite a bit of engagement too. I'm just thinking like, you know, you always see the pictures of the winners and stuff. And the idea that, you know, you can catch any fish and possibly it's be so a winner, cute. I feel like is encouraging.
It is. And it's really fun. You know, seeing the same kids the last 3 years has been so much fun. And that's where it is always really nice when we do get into the event time of the year because you do see these kids growing up and you get to see the same ones over and over. And it's very makes your heart happy to see that that's something they look forward to every year.
Yeah. Well, and like stuff like that is so quintessentially Alaskan. And I'm thinking of, you know, even when I moved up here from the lower 48, you know, like the first thing you do is Google, you know, Kenai, Alaska, things to do, whatnot. And
yeah.
I know like the city has kind of grappled with how to best market all of the things there is to do here. And yeah. I'm wondering, like, you know, if you are, you know, traveling in the lower 48 and, you know, you meet somebody who's never been to Kenai, what's your elevator pitch for why they should maybe stop in and visit?
Oh, gosh. Well, I always bring up the fact, actually, I always get put on a plane next to somebody who is so excited to talk about Alaska.
Yeah, there you go.
Every single time. I always, and what's funny, just a side note, I look so unapproachable on a plane. Like, I have the big headphones on. I, like, put my hood up because I'm like a sleeper on a plane, no matter what time it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is, but people always tap me on the shoulder and they're like, hi, where are you going?
Oh,
and
I'm like, gosh.
Really?
You're like, I'm going to need you to use some context clues, take in some of the signals.
I don't know what it is. I have never been able to figure out what about me in that situation, especially says, I want to talk to you.
You should talk to me. Yeah.
Anyway. Uh-huh. But I always talk about the fact of, you know, I was very hesitant to move back to Alaska. after living in Anchorage my whole life.
Why is that?
I was done. Like, I wanted to leave so bad because I wanted to be in the lower 48 where I could go drive to another state, or, you know, if I want, I don't know, Jack in the Box tacos, you know, I can find them within 5 minutes away. I wanted the accessibility and the convenience, and because my dad's side of the family is from California, so I'd get to experience that, you know, a couple months of the year and be like, oh gosh, can't we live down here? I always felt so trapped in Anchorage and like stifled from my potential. But then when we moved to Kenai, it was just nice. Like, I just felt, again, everyone was very welcoming. When I lived in Washington, we lived in Forks, Washington, which is tiny.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
Twilight moment. Oh my gosh.
Steelhead capital of the world.
Okay.
As well, as my husband would say, because he gets all butthurt about it being Twilight.
Two sides of the coin.
Yeah. Yeah. but living there is miserable. And everyone there is very, like, if you're not from there, it's impossible to make friends. There's nowhere to work. Remote work doesn't even work because the rain is so bad that it messes with the internet. Like, I have never lived somewhere that was so disconnected from everything. And I was just like, I'm going to go crazy here.
Yeah.
So I thought that was, you know, that was what I thought of small towns. And so when we were moving, because I live in Soldotna, which is funny. But when we moved, I was like, gosh, I hope it's different. And it was so different.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful and it's friendly and it's nice. And it's just, there's beautiful things everywhere that I think a lot of people take for granted. Like, when you're driving down the street and Readout is there with the sunset, and you're just like, look at that thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. The resources here are crazy. And the community. Again, I don't think there's anywhere else I've ever lived where the community fought so hard for nonprofits and for children's services and for things that make sense. Now, they can be very stubborn, and I understand that because you change traditions and they're like, why are you doing this? But I feel like they all come around after they yell at you for a while.
You're listening to KDLL 91.9 FM, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. This is the Kenai Conversation. On today's episode, we're joined by Samantha Springer, Executive Director of the Kenai Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center. Is there a specific decision that's coming to mind as you maybe recall some of that?
So many. So many. Just a random one, the beer garden. At the 4th of July has always been a point of contention for people. I have made it very clear. The 4th of July is not a beer and wine event. It is a, like, kids / family friendly event that has a beer garden. So I just put the beer garden in the back.
Yeah.
And we put the food vendors around it and the stage, and then everything else is vendors and, you know, everything you've seen.
Yeah.
People have a problem with that. Like, they want the beer garden, like, up front. And I'm like, no, you're going to have to walk past all these local vendors.
Yeah.
And look them in the face if you don't want to go there. And then you can have a beer.
Okay.
But, like, it's not a beer event. It has beer.
Yeah.
So that was one. There was an issue with the first year I was here. When did I start? In March. So 4th of July was a couple months later. Not 4th of July. That same year, though, Christmas comes to Kenai. The fire department asked to go first. You would have thought I declared war on Santa.
Oh, no.
And on Kenai. Because they were like, why is Santa first? He always goes last. And I was like, the fire department wanted to go first. Like, how do you say no to the fire department? They're the ones, like, I don't tell the fire department what to do.
Yeah.
They tell me where they want to go. And so that was I can't even tell you how many, like, phone calls I got, like, people yelling and like hanging up on me.
Oh boy.
And I was like, what is happening?
So is the fire department going first now?
No, only that first year. So I did call them and I was like, politely, is there a reason you have to go at first, or can we go? And it was a new fire chief, and he had said, well, yeah, if we need to leave, we're going to leave either way. So the back's fine. And
there
I was
you
like,
go.
Cool. Thank you. That will save a lot of issues. And just, yeah, random parade things seem to really get people up in arms.
Mm-hmm.
But those ones specifically.
Yeah.
That I could think of.
Yeah. Well, you know, going back to we're sitting in an airplane and you're talking to somebody. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Redoubt, some of the community here. Are you making specific recommendations as far as what you're promoting? What are you saying?
Oh gosh, I try and promote. Usually it's whatever they're interested in, because you know, you never know if you're sitting next to a hiker, a fisher, angler, mm-hmm. or a hunter or anything. So it's just but literally almost every single interest that someone has, there's something that you can do on the peninsula mm-hmm. for. Yep. So it's not hard to talk up this place because of that.
Yeah. If you have somebody who like maybe comes into the chamber during the summer, you know, looking for recommendations of things to do, or do you have like a go-to that folks really seem to love?
You know, what's funny is I'm not out there a lot doing that. We have the visitor service reps that are the main source there, and we have them go through the visitor guide a lot mm-hmm. and kind of showcase what's in there. Because really that visitor guide, the whole point of that is to be a resource for people visiting or planning to move here. So they can see like local restaurants and local hiking spots and, you know, different businesses and what they're doing. So, you know, that's their first thing, is to kind of go through what we already have available for resources.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, tell me a little bit about this major award you guys just got. What is tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So the Alaska Chamber does a business summit every year. It used to be called the Fall Forum, and they present, I believe, 4 awards to different organizations/individuals. And the Local Chamber of the Year award is basically a nomination by a peer or anyone, and then the Alaska Chamber Board votes on it and they choose a winner. But it is based on community involvement and like just basically accomplishments that the chamber has provided the community. So this year we were nominated and chosen to be the Local Chamber of the Year, which was a big blessing. Like, I felt really happy because you know, you put so much work into all these things and you don't always feel like people see it or necessarily care about what you're doing. So when you are recognized, it does feel really good. And I think even last year I got the outstanding industry award for tourism from the Industry Appreciation Day as an individual, and it felt really good too. So it's like those little things that kind of, you know, it doesn't motivate me to continue, because I wouldn't stop even if I didn't get an award, but it's just it does make you feel good to have some recognition when mm-hmm. when you work as much as we do.
Do you know who nominated you?
Our board president, actually, Greg Stein.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess like I won't ask you to speak on behalf of the board who's voting on this, but
sure.
You know, what are they looking for? Like this year specifically, what do you think Kenai was bringing to the table that maybe some of the other chambers you know, weren't?
I think it had a lot to do with the innovation of new programming and events, as well as the changes to the cultural center. I think mm-hmm. that was a big push. Some of our partnerships with the with other organizations as well were highlighted when we were presented with the award. So I do believe that it was just kind of a culmination of all of the things that we've put together. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just made us stand out this year.
And you got to travel to Girdwood, yeah. right, to accept it. What all did you get to do there?
So the Business Summit is a really great event already. The first day, there is a executive director chamber like meeting where we meet from about 12 to 4 with all the other executive directors from different chambers around the state. And talk about what's working, what's not working. There's usually a lot of new executive directors. I guess this job has kind of a high turnover rate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good place for them to ask questions of those of us who have been there for a little bit longer. and to kind of, you know, bounce ideas off to be like, is this a good idea? And we can be like, oof, did you think that through?
Mm-hmm.
Though it's funny because a few of my ideas from the first year I went, people were like, oh, you're not going to want to do that. And we're still doing it to this day, which
is the last laugh.
Yeah, I'm like, told you it would work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first day. And then there's like a little meet and greet reception. The next day, there's a bunch of different topics that they go over and have different speakers for throughout the day, whether it's, you know, having representatives speak to us, or there was things about, you know, Proposition 1 or not Proposition 1, Ballot Measure 1, and how to translate that for local businesses and assist with that. We talk about like different legislative affairs that are going on that the Alaska Chamber is, you know, heavily involved in, as far as going to Juneau and fighting for some of those things for businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the awards throughout the day, which is great. And then the next day is all about what the Alaska Chamber is going to focus on with the Legislative Affairs Committee. Mm-hmm. For the year, basically.
Okay. Well, in you know, you mentioned Ballot Measure 1 and some of these other legislative topics,
yeah.
And especially because the chamber has such a direct line to businesses in the community. I'm wondering if you can maybe talk a little bit about what that informational piece looks like, as far as, are you liaising between, you know, like what's happening in Juneau that could affect our local businesses here?
You know, I want to get better at doing that. I think that's one thing that's been lacking in my position, just because, you know, I feel like this is probably the first year I have a complete grasp of my position. It took so long to get to here and to work out all the details of who should be doing what in our organization, what we can be doing differently, getting more involved. Like, I go to Juneau every January with the Alaska Chamber fly-in. To talk to the different representatives. And I think that it's really important to get that information back. I am still trying to figure out how we're going to do that because I do think it's really important. I think I'm pretty good about getting out information when it's really important around the time of voting.
Mm-hmm.
So I put out a bunch of information during that time that is impartial, that just kind of explained what was going on without taking a side.
Mm-hmm.
And same with like when we have candidates, I release, you know, who's running, here's their information, here's where you can find more information, because I think that that's really important to get that out and be a source of information. We want to be another place where people go, oh, I know where I can find that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to. And we like to link it out. Like when you guys share a story, we share it back out. You know, mm-hmm. when the other place does, we do the same thing. So, but trying to figure out exactly the best way to be that resource, whether it's doing a workshop on, you know, how to implement, you know, the leave program and making sure that you're meeting all the requirements for minimum wage and such. I'm not 100% sure on where we're going to go with that. And that might tie into the community lecture series eventually.
Mm.
Same with, you know, just even knowing what permits you need to start a business. We get so many people that come in asking, I want to start a small business, what do I need? And you know, at first, when I first started working there, they would refer people to the city. Like, you could hear the front desk be like, oh, well, you can go talk to the city. And it's like, no, like, they're here. So I'd like run out from my office.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, well, you know, you need to register for business with the state of Alaska. And then you need to, you know, if you're in the city of Kenai, you need to, you know, go talk to them and make sure you have the right permits. If it's food, if it's, you know, there's so many different things you need to do. And then you need to go to the borough and you need to, you know, you're gonna have to pay taxes.
Yeah.
Like all these things. But like giving them all the things that they need to do rather than just sending them to one of the locations and being like, good luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's literally what we're supposed to be there for, is a chamber of commerce is there to assist businesses. So trying to figure out the best way to do that, though, is tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And to let people know what services we have available is tricky, because I feel like no matter how we put it, if we put it on the website, or if we put it on Facebook, if we talk about it on the radio, we're not hitting the bullseye here. People still don't know what we do.
It's so stratified, like where people get their information too. I think it's, you know, we certainly struggle with that as far as trying to find one way to reach a large amount of people.
Right. It's really, really, really hard. So we keep trying, and it's funny because the Kenai Peninsula, I feel like, is so different on the way it receives information that I would never in a million years guess how many people listen to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't think that was a thing. I thought people just streamed their music.
Yeah.
But it is. People listen to the radio here. People open their mail here.
Mm-hmm.
Like things that you don't think about that don't work in markets like Anchorage.
Yeah.
Work here. Mm-hmm. So it's all about finding the right way to reach people. And also having multiple personalities at our office that if you don't like one of us, if one of us is not your flavor, then we'll find somebody who is, because we're all very different in our approach. Sometimes I'm a little bit more aggressive, which is fine. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people don't like that. So yeah. Then I'm like, Natalie's really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to talk to Natalie?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Well, and I'm wondering, like, you know, you're talking about like when we're talking about like reaching businesses. I mean, do you find that folks reach out to the chamber with, again, I'm harping a little bit on ballot measure one, but that was just such a, you know, minimum wage, sick leave. That was something that affected businesses here so immediately. And I'm wondering if you had folks reach out, like looking for support on that, or also, you know, of course, we've got larger economic, you know, trends happening as far as, you know, things like tariffs and mm-hmm. where things are sourced. And I'm wondering if you like find that businesses locally are turning to you guys for information or support.
So they are not. And I think that's actually more concerning. Because I don't think that a lot of people know what's going on.
Mm.
I think that a lot of businesses might still not necessarily be compliant with what is going on because it was so confusing. And I feel like it was very misleading the way it was all bundled together. Mm. I feel like it wasn't very well thought out for seasonal businesses. And for...
You're talking about minimum wage and sick leave?
Whole kit and caboodle.
Okay.
I just don't think that it was a very thought out plan for communities like this that have a seasonal aspect to it.
Mm. Well, I guess why is that? Why does the seasonality matter?
So when you're talking about bringing on someone for 6 weeks and you have to give them a certain amount of sick leave and you cannot ask them anything about it whatsoever, you are making it a problem that did not exist before, because now people have something where we need, that's why we need them, is their seasonal staff.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a short window of time. There's not usually people to fill in for seasonal staff.
Mm.
So you're shutting down businesses sometimes in order to provide somebody with something they might not have needed or for seasonal. Like, I understand that full-time, even part-time, year-round staff should have access to sick leave and have the correct minimum wage. But I feel like this was a really poor thought for these smaller communities that rely on seasonal staff to get by when, and I mean, everyone who takes a seasonal job usually knows what they're getting into. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to be working weekends. You might be working late. If you're fishing, you could be working, you know, long days. So that's where I think there was a big disconnect in thinking about the smaller communities and how that could affect them. And even like the size of the businesses, you know, not everybody can afford to give out that much in sick leave.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I don't know. I think that not all the pieces fit.
Yeah. I guess, do you have like ideas for what would have been a better way to roll that out?
You know, Justin Ruffridge actually has been working on this extensively, and I am pretty much on board with everything that he's trying to do, which is, you know, change the seasonality of it to make sure that it isn't going to be detrimental to a small business that only runs, you know, 3 months of the year. Change the size limit to, so, you know, a business with under, I think, what did he say? I don't know if it was 25 or 50 people. Didn't meet the same rules and requirements, things like that. But I think there's a lot that can be done. And I really think that it should have been more of a discussion. But again, it's so hard to get people together unless they're already outraged.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, you see it every city council meeting I go to, no one is there. It's like you and I or Jake, one person is there in addition.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go on Facebook and they're like, why is no one doing anything? And you're like, mm-hmm. why didn't you just come to the meeting?
They're open to the public. Yeah.
Literally. And it's the same thing when people complain about things that we're doing or what how we're doing things. I'm mm-hmm. like, come see me.
Yeah.
Come volunteer. You don't like the fireworks show? Donate some money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but people love to be keyboard warriors, but they don't want to participate.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what to do, but we're just going to keep going.
Yeah.
And we stop in, you know, the other thing is going out when we have more time, which we haven't lately. I love going out to businesses mm-hmm. and being like, how's it going?
Yeah.
What are you guys doing? Are you having issues? Are you doing fine? You know, and it's crazy because a lot of places, even when we were getting donations for like the fundraiser, they were like, we just can't do it this year. Like mm-hmm. it was a slower year. And then we're like, totally fine. Is there anything we can help you with? It's not just a one-sided thing where we just call you for a donation.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they weren't a member, we were like, if you're not a member and you need assistance, you can still call us. We're not. Just because we have a membership base and there are certain advantages to being a member does not mean that we are closed off to people who can't afford or need help outside of that.
Yeah, I guess what exactly does a business get by being a chamber member?
There are some exclusive things that you get as far as like services. So, you know, if you need notary services, you get that in charge. If you need our bulk mailing rate, you can get that. When we do those community classes that we were doing it for membership, members were free. And then the public would pay a fee if they weren't part of a membership.
Mm-hmm.
So we try and give a bunch of different advantages. And, you know, there's a lot of advantage to just being listed in the membership guide and directory. Because when you Google certain businesses, they might not have a website, but they'll pop up on the Keno Chamber website. And we send out that report every year so people know how many times their business was viewed from our website.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not worth it, we want them to see that too, because if nobody was seeing their listing, I wouldn't want to pay for that as a business. I want to know.
Yeah.
And so I've always been very transparent about that and been like, yeah, I don't know why it's not working, but it's not.
But it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I would get it if you didn't want to be a member anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different business services available like that. But outside of that, I do want to make it very clear that we are available anytime for questions or for businesses that are not members as well, mm-hmm. because I think that is really important, that we want to be a resource. We want to be something that is there for the community, and it's not just all about making money.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you talked a little bit about when you were in Girdwood, the state chamber organization kind of like mapping out future topics, legislative priorities. Is there anything you see coming down the pipe that you think would be good for local businesses to engage with, or what might we expect out of Juno from the chamber side of things?
You know, the biggest things that I took away, you know, they are going to really be pushing for helping smaller businesses and seasonal businesses with ballot measure one. That's something that they're going to continue to go for. Another one that they were really involved with was the was alcohol distribution through like DoorDash and those type services. What is it? Instacart. That one was interesting to me. That one, it really needs a lot more details in it as well. Like it's all these little things that are like in the planning stages, but it's kind of like what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I don't remember all the rest of them. What's nice though is they do put out kind of a cheat sheet on the Alaska Chamber website that says what their main priorities are for the year. And it's just a lot of it is something that is for the entire state of Alaska, so that it's, you know, what they're fighting for is things that will affect small to medium sized businesses in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess like within Kenai, you know, would you care, like how many small, medium, large businesses, I won't ask you to say the number, but I just am wondering, do we tend to have more smaller to medium businesses, or is it diverse?
There's so many. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many businesses. I have downloaded the business license, you know, off the state of Alaska for the Kenai. And there's so many businesses on there that I haven't even heard of, which means some of them probably aren't even storefronts yet, or they could be out of the home. But there's, I mean, there's thousands in there that I don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot. There's a lot of things happening. And again, we're still trying to figure out how to reach everybody in a good way.
Well, that's a good point, too. Like, you know, people who have like businesses that they run out of their home, for which you, you know, legally might still need a license, but you don't see them when you're driving down the street.
Right.
But there's still a business operating within the city. That's a good point.
Yeah. There's so many. Like, mm-hmm. you just it's pretty bonkers how many different businesses there are and how many nonprofits there are.
Yeah.
It's crazy to pull up. It's fun to look at those lists sometimes. I love Excel sheets.
Yeah.
So
you and I have that in common.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're nearing the end of the hour, and I'm wondering, you know, we've talked about the Haunted Chamber a few times, but what else is, you know, on the horizon for you guys that you're maybe trying to get the word out about?
Yeah. So a big one for us is last year we started an Angel Tree to help support local families in need, where you could nominate your own family or you could nominate yourselves. And we ended up helping about, I want to say it was 122 families last year. With needs for Christmas. And that was things from gas cards to clothing, toys, personal hygiene products, anything that they needed, we asked them to list on there. We didn't ask for reasons. We didn't ask for income verification. We didn't ask for anything. We asked for just lists. And it's so funny. It's not funny. It makes me tear up still thinking about it. How many people in the notes wrote about the circumstances that they were having in order to fill out that form.
Yeah.
So we're definitely doing that again. Mm-hmm. The community, like I said, the community was absolutely amazing. We are working with Operation Children First this year. Matt is so pivotal in that role, and I think that he'll really be able to help tie into that with us. And he's actually, we're having a toy drive during the Haunted Chamber for them as well.
Okay.
So I'm really looking forward to helping those families out again.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Christmas Comes to Kenai is, you know, we're already working on it.
Yeah, it's coming up.
I don't know if we're going to do reindeer again in the cultural center now that we redid it.
Sure.
But it was fun. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. You never know what crazy idea I'll come up with a month beforehand.
Yeah, whatever works. Yeah. And as far as I know, you guys send out the chamber newsletters pretty regularly for folks who are wanting to stay, you know, just up to date about everything that you're doing. Is that what's the best place for them to go?
Yeah. So I'm trying to think. I know that Maddie also posts the newsletters on our Facebook page. So there's a way to click on them and then you could subscribe to it. You can always call us or email us too if you wanted to get added to that email list. We have basically programs in there that are not just ours, but Soldotna Chambers events, Homer Chambers events, every local organization that sends us our events or we find online, we throw in there when we can, when we have time to find extra events. But we do try, and because we know people forget to send it in.
Yeah.
But if we see something that's important, we usually try and throw it in there as well. But that is a really good resource because it's just, there's so many things going on all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'll just throw it to you for the last, you know, round here. If there's anything else that you are wanting to talk about or want folks to know about the chamber, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just taking away the misconception that, you know, we are just a city organization that is out trying to make money and we don't do anything. I feel like that's such a weird misconception that can be cleared up so easily if you came in to see us. Our doors are always open. Our phones are always available. I am always willing to talk to people and clear up any misconceptions, which I feel like I've done a lot of, which is probably why we're in a good place, because I've talked to so many people and found out what was missing as far as they were concerned. But we want that public opinion. I don't want to just make stuff up in my head of what I think people need. I would love to actually hear from the public and organizations on what is lacking. Beside, we know that, you know, things for kids are lacking, and we're always trying to think about that. But if you need business resources, that's what we want to know. What do you need training on? What can we help with? And let us be that resource for you.
And that'll be all for this week's episode of the Kenai Conversation. Thank you so much again to Samantha Springer for joining us. As a reminder, you can hear the Kenai Conversation every Wednesday at 10 a.m. and Saturday at 5 p.m. here on KDLL. You can also find the show on our website at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for listening.